celebrating freedom in the home of the brave and the land of the free. Or for some of us. Anyway, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, it's great to be back with you, Barry, as we record this on Thursday, July 4th, the anniversary of the birth of the United States of America, of which we are proud citizens of.
Yes.
We are some of the remaining proud citizens. If you pay attention to the news media, of course, we have nothing to be proud of. We need to remove all references to anyone who ever once had an evil thought in their head. Perfection is an absolute necessity to be considered a true founding father, and therefore... But the left gets to decide what perfection means, which is the interesting part. Now, just a word about last week's show. If you tuned in and you're like, the commentary's kind of odd. You know, I made references to bad things that had happened during the week and that kind of thing. Folks, that show was from 2015. That was an archive show. And I used it because we used it the week before July 4th, or the week of July 4th, in 2015. And it was a class from Camp American done by Barry Sheets.
Oh, goodness. Boy, you brought out some of the worst of our...
I know.
I thought we were supposed to run a best of, Chuck, not a worst of.
The worst of Camp American. No, it was a very good class. It basically talked about... You did a lot of things about Romans 13 and how basically how we need to engage and how important it is to get young people engaged. Now, we've got a lot of young people engaged. Unfortunately, they have been co-opted in large part, not everybody. Don't paint with too broad a brush. But the ones who are making headlines are essentially putting masks on their face and beating up journalists in Portland, Oregon.
Yes, and that's really kind of a tragic situation up there. But again, Chuck, what is my first mantra of all politics?
Well, the left always
over and over and over again.
The left always outruns its cover.
Exactly. And I think that what we're seeing is groups like Antifa or BLM or whoever it might be. They are truly outrunning their cover, because their cover was that they're all about tolerance and acceptance and about, fairness and equality. We hear all these buzzwords pumped by mainstream media, which basically are all internal secret handshake code for the left's idea of truth, justice in the American way. Needs to be preeminent, and everybody else just needs to shut down and be quiet. And every time they start making a little headway, something like this comes up where they show just how tolerant and accepting and understanding they are of ideas that they don't agree with, such as this conservative journalist up in Oregon whom they beat savagely. And Chuck, you've heard of this thing that's been going on in Britain, I think, and maybe in Australia too, where radical leftist protesters have been throwing milkshakes politicians and people that they don't like.
Milkshake assault. Well, yeah.
Yeah, milkshake assault. Well, the Antifa protesters in Oregon took this one little step further, and probably a step far too far. They did a milkshake on this journalist. But their milkshake was filled with quick drying cement that they had just poured. So caustic, I don't know if you've ever worked with quick drying cement, Chuck, but you don't want to get it on you when you get it wet.
No, it's better not to.
It will burn you like fire.
Yeah, it's bad news stuff. But this shouldn't surprise us, because. These guys have been working up to this kind of violence. Now, what they claim is that we are the violent ones. If you haven't paid any attention, the most dangerous people in America, if you watch MSNBC, are white males, especially white conservative males who are Christians.
Because, I knew I was bad to the bone.
Yeah, I know. Because we're supposedly committing all these violent crimes. Well, okay. When white people are the majority, we still commit the majority of crimes. It's a statistical lie, essentially. I mean, yes, do white people commit the majority of crimes? Yes, why? Because they're the majority of people. However, if you break it down and look at it versus the actual percentage of population, and if you look at violent crime versus the percentage of population, sadly, black people, unfortunately, for whatever reason, are committing about 45% of the crime, but they're violent crime, but they're about 13 or 14% of the population. Why is that? I don't know. It's some cultural thing. The apologists on TV will tell you it has to do with the fact that white people don't get prosecuted. And I can assure you that is completely false. All I have to do is go to the local newspaper and I can show you that white people do get prosecuted for violent crime. Nobody's giving them a pat on the back and a free get out of jail free card. It's just not happening. But what's going on out there is essentially it is what happens. Now again, we are supposedly quote unquote on the right, and what does the right get blamed for? We get called brown shirts, we get called fascists and blah blah blah, and yet who's perpetrating the violence under the umbrella of protection of the local government there? The mayor of Portland basically said, stand down and let these guys do what they're going to do. This is not the first time that's happened. If you remember, I think there was a G8 meeting there in Portland. Oh, gosh, I don't know. During the Obama administration.
Yes.
And the quote-unquote Antifa protesters came in and disrupted. Now, there were a lot of our libertarian friends who were singing the praises of this disruption of the G8 meeting. I got no use for the G8. It's a globalist economic summit. Government leaders about how basically we can all meld our economies into one big happy family. But these Antifas came out, and what's their big beef? Well, it's international banking. Well, again, that's a point of agreement, but the first thing I wouldn't do is beat people up and throw bricks through the windows of non-offending corporations. It amazes me in Seattle or Portland. I think it was in Seattle. They were actually throwing bricks through the windows of what? Starbucks. What? Yeah, I'm like, okay. Starbucks is on your side for the most part.
you would think.
Why are you chucking bricks through the window of the local Starbucks? And basically, because they could. The mayor of Seattle at the time stood the police down and basically said, "Form a perimeter around and let them riot." Well, how does that always work out? It doesn't work out well ever. Because rioters will do what rioters will do. I'm a broken window guy. I said, one broken window, everybody in the vicinity goes to the jug. Let the judge sort it out.
That would be the smart thing to do.
Yeah, you've got prosecutors when people are arrested refusing to prosecute.
Oh, yeah, we've had that happen here in Columbus over certain things.
So. Absolutely, because the prosecutor said, well, the law is unenforceable and it's unconstitutional and I'm not going to. That's not your job. Your job's to enforce it and to defend it.
That's right.
And if you're not going to do that, then you need to recuse or step down. We had that thing in Chicago with this actor-singer person.
Oh, Jussie Smollett.
Jussie Smollett, who essentially, I mean, unless you're living in a cave, you've heard all this. But you may not have paid attention to the follow-up to that, which is basically the police were so outraged and other people in the state were so outraged that essentially a special prosecutor has been impaneled to prosecute the prosecutor who dropped the case.
Well, that makes some sense considering the breadcrumb trail that was figured out of where she had been. Generously remunerated by certain interests like George Soros after she basically completely waived all charges against Smollett and against his supposed attackers.
She's an acolyte of Michelle Obama.
Yes.
Michelle Obama is up to this mess in her... there are connections that have been made that basically Michelle Obama was at least peripherally involved in this.
So, oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what you're seeing is a changeover. You've got the revolutionaries from the 60s who were essentially like, we want a piece of power because everything's unfair. It's all biased towards one side, it's all biased to the conservative side. We need to be given the reins of power, at least some of it, so that we can make sure everything's balanced out. Well, what happens? You can see it from the old college radicals who sat in president of universities' offices demanding free tuition, demanding all these things, control of the
campus radicals from the 60s are still demanding free tuition, except now they're demanding it running for president of the United States.
No, I'll tell you where they are. They're sitting in the president of the university's offices raising tuition at will.
Yeah, that's true.
To pay for cockamamie social programs and essentially squeeze out conservative groups from any form of funding whatsoever. This is the radicals who said, you know, give us power and we'll fix the problems. Oh, you fixed the problems all right. You fixed them so they may never get fixed.
Well, that's how they fix the problems, is that they make them permanent and they make sure that the punishment goes toward their political enemies.
Well, that's Marxist theory, Barry. I mean, the revolution is a permanent structure.
Yes.
Until such time as man becomes perfect, the revolution is a permanent structure.
Well, kind of got the news for him. That idea of waiting until you perfect man temporarily isn't going to happen.
No. Well, look, that's the difference between the worldview, between the Christian worldview and the Marxist worldview. Marxists believe that man is ultimate and society are ultimately perfectible under their own steam. And mm-hmm. The Christian worldview is, oh, we'll be perfect someday under the auspices of Jesus Christ. And there's a vast difference there. In fact, the reason that Marxists eschew Christ is because they say it's a crutch. It holds people up and makes them look forward to a day when Christ will, and there is no Christ, and therefore this will never happen. That's the vast difference, and you can see it. Yep. You can see it in what we're dealing with. Everybody's okay. I'm since it's July 4th, I'm very taken aback over the last few days. Nike puts out a tennis shoe. This is a symbol. This is a symbol. This is a place, and we don't want to get too focused on the symbol. But the fact is, Nike put out some red, white, and blue tennis shoes. Frankly, I thought they were kind of ugly, but I might have bought a pair just for purposes of, you know, wearing them to this or that event or something. But the fact is, I think it's called an Ansley flag. It has a circular, a 13-star pattern in a circle in the blue field.
Yeah, everybody's calling it a Betsy Ross flag
because that's what she sewed up when George Washington asked her to. Okay, all of a sudden, Nike's going to produce these shoes, and in fact, they produce thousands of the darn things.
Of course.
At probably about $85 a pop, be my guess, knowing Nike. They're probably expensive. Good luck buying those, because Colin Kaepernick gave a call to Nike and said, it's racist. Betsy Ross is a racist.
Wow.
talk
about your historical revisionism. That's pretty good.
And the circle, well, look, this is part and parcel of critical theory. I won't kid you that I totally understand critical theory, but critical theory basically says that anybody who ever was associated with or had anything to do with or in any way peripherally connected to things that went on in the past was racist. Now,
Well, if that's the case, then, Chuck, carrying out to its logical conclusion, then you have to go back and understand that the way that slaves were, shall we say, acquired in the triangle trade was that the Europeans and the English went to Africa and they cut deals to bring, I think it was, they brought rum to Africa from Jamaica. And then in trade, the chieftains of the tribes in Africa, who, shall I remind our listeners, were African and black African at that, would round up their dissidents, their lawbreakers, and the captives from rival tribes that they had taken in combat or in military type actions and sell them to the Europeans in exchange for rum and other goods.
Well, you know who the big players were in the slave trade? You named the English. You know who the big players were in the slave trade? You named the English, but it wasn't them, at least at first.
It was the Dutch. Yeah.
The Dutch were huge players, and who'd they deal with? They dealt with West African Muslim tribal chiefs. Why? Because Islam did then and continues to, even though Christians have become more enlightened about chattel slavery, Muslims of certain stripes continue to hold to it. They keep it quiet, but slaves are still sold. There's slavery in Africa now.
Oh, yes.
There's slavery in the Middle East now.
Ask Sudanese Christians if there are slavery.
That's right.
As they're the objects of the slavery, not the slavers themselves.
The primary targets. Yep. The primary targets. So, we need to have a realistic discussion of history. And the fact is, again, I go back to 60s radicals who have now taken over economics departments, history departments, philosophy departments. Name a department, even scientific departments. And critical race theory and critical feminist theory are part of the curriculum. If your kid goes to college, I don't care what college you're sending them to, if you're sending them to Mount Vernon Nazarene, they're getting critical theory and mm-hmm. have been for years, because people would come back from Mount Vernon Nazarene when I was a Nazarene, and some of the stuff that would come out of their mouth, where'd you hear this? Oh, I had Professor so-and-so at Mount Vernon Nazarene, yes. Okay, well, let me tell you, and I would go to the mat with them. Well, that's what I'm learning in school, and I go, look, one of the things you're supposed to be learning is how to think critically.
Right.
And you aren't. What you're learning is to regurgitate Marxist critical theory. Sorry, if that... And I would talk to the parents, we're going to send them to this school. Are you sure you really want to? Are you sure? Why? Because this, that can't happen there.
And then, that's what you call complete blindness. And it then can't happen here.
10 years later, they come,
and say, well, why not?
And 10 years later, they'll come to me and say, you know, you were absolutely right about that. That school ruined my child. It's not just, you know, I'm not picking on MVNU specifically. Yeah. Name a Christian college. It's got at least the seeds of critical Marxist theory embedded in it. Why? You can't walk away from it. Look at what's going
on. Marxists embedded themselves into academia.
Look what's going on in the church. My gosh, Barry, you're a member of the PCA.
Oh, please don't remind me at this point.
I mean, talk about that. Talk about what just went on at your GA, your General Assembly.
Well, I'm still trying to piece through it all.
Right.
But basically, what we've come up with is that it seems as our denomination is getting ready for a major schism over human sexuality.
Yep.
Which
is part of critical theory.
Which is part of critical theory. There had been over the last about year an issue that had come up that a denominational school had hosted, or in a church, and a school had hosted what's called the Revoice Conference, which is basically and I don't want to say mainstreaming, but it's the idea of pushing that homosexuality is not so much a sin as it is just a struggle that people go through. And so therefore, you know, we can have celibate gay leaders in the church, teaching and ruling elders in our church. And of course, that met with quite a bit of pushback from many voices within the church who understand that we have to hold to the gospel of Jesus Christ, where homosexuality is a sin, and as a sin, it is offensive to a holy God, and being offensive to a holy God means that it cannot be condoned by his church and accepted and allowed to go on without bringing the saving message of the gospel and seeking for repentance, restoration, and rebuilding of those broken relationships and those broken patterns of thinking to be subsumed by the, you know, putting on the mind of Christ and following him instead of following our flesh and our sinful desires. And it culminated with our assembly last week of how we adopted what is known as the Nashville Statement, which was a large, somewhat ecumenical movement among evangelicals to reaffirm the traditional biblical understanding of sexuality. Well, that met with a split vote in our denomination. It passed. Now, it has to go back, since it was an overture to accept it, it has to go back out to our nearly 80 presbyteries over this next year to be voted on by the presbyteries. And it has to get a 2/3 vote of approval in the presbyteries before it becomes part of our Book of Church Order or part of our governing documents. And so that's where it's going to go to. But during the debate over it, we had some people, one in particular, and I'm not going to name any names here, but you can go online, if you go and Google it or go to Facebook, you can probably find it. An individual who is a teaching elder in one of our churches and one of our presbyteries in the PCA basically stand up and first of all state that he was homosexual, non-practicing, mind you, and that ultimately in some of his tweets after his speech, he gave this impassioned speech where he basically went completely to emotionalism and trying to embarrass those who would say that there is a biblical sexuality that is clear in the scriptures and is not compatible with homosexual desires or homosexual activity. And so basically he gave this impassioned speech, which was applauded by a number of the commissioners who had gone to the assembly. These are teaching and ruling elders in our denomination who obviously don't understand that scripture cannot and will not condone homosexual behavior or homosexual ideation, especially not in the officers of the church. And then afterwards, there were some tweets from this same individual brought up that basically said, well, the National Statement proponents won this round, but we're going to win the war.
Exactly.
And I'm like, okay, well, you've actually put it in terms we can all understand now. This is a war we're fighting, and you are attacking. and that you will not go away, you will not sit down. And he talked about how the demographics were shifting and younger people voted with them, and so just the whole Marxist critical theory was on display in this gentleman's thinking and his voting. That basically whatever he desires, for himself personally in a sexual realm, must be what everybody else must accept, even if it violates scripture in the church.
Yeah. And the question is, Barry, you stated at the beginning of this, you said that homosexuality is a struggle, but not a sin.
No, well, I said that is what they were saying.
Well, no, no, no. That's what I meant. Not you didn't say it. But you
yeah, quote, well, I want to make sure you said, no, I don't hold to that.
No, you quoted that. Yes. Why would something that's not a sin be a struggle?
Well, it's just the struggle to get everybody else to understand how wonderful it is and how normative we should get and how you know, we're all being narrow-minded and, bigoted by not embracing any kind of expression of sexuality, because obviously our new God is our feelings and our sexual urges.
And again, that is about, think about this: sexuality is the new God. It's not an act that God has given for both the pleasure and for the reproduction of the human race.
And given within the bounds of His Word.
But now it is something that is so sacred that it should be worshipped on its own, and therefore anyone who has any kind of a feeling should embrace it, because it's part and parcel of themselves. There is a problem with that, if you think about it. Does that mean that any form of sexuality that anyone feels is allowable? And
we won't go into the direction. Yes.
Yeah, we won't go into the perversions, but the fact is that you can think of something.
Chuck, we need to because it's. Let me just put this straight out there. One of my friends on Facebook posted a tweet from an activist. In essence, and I'll read it here in just a moment. Is that this individual was, and just remember, Chuck, we're celebrating our independence here on the 4th of July when we're recording this, but just this last entire month was considered Pride Month for the radical sexual deviancy movement, pushing. Basically, it was a tweet from somebody from the Pride celebration, and this is what it said. Now, okay, and folks, this isn't just some oddball single individual out here saying this. This is, again, the left outrunning their cover, because you will start seeing, and we can start showing you, where this kind of idea is being pushed in classroom discussions. This idea is being pushed in the halls of power. This idea is being pushed in the corporate boardrooms. And once I read this quote, you'll start thinking about where you've seen things like this. And this quote is from this individual, and I'm not going to give them any notoriety by saying who they are, because I don't want everybody going over to their Twitter account and making them feel like they've hit on something where everybody's excited about it. And then the tweet says, "Children enjoy sex, whether that's between themselves or someone their age, or even better yet, someone who's mature and can guide them through sex. Sex between an adult and a child doesn't always equal rape. Pedos," and by that they mean pedophiles, uh-huh, "pedos need to be accepted. Hashtag LGBTQP, hashtag Pride 2019.
Look, well, you and I have been predicting this for the entirety of this program that has been on the air, which goes back to, I think, 2011. So we've been doing this for 8 years. We've been predicting this, and when we discussed this issue, that look out, folks, pedophilia is going to be one of the next steps. We already see people who are bestiality and name a perversion that it's out there, and people are quote unquote being encouraged to be proud of their. Now, pedophilia is still a crime, and thank the
Chuck,
Lord for that.
You use the other term, the B term, bestiality,
right?
people are shocked by this, but it was only about a session and a half ago, so it was like in 2016 that Ohio finally, after 10 years of trying, finally made the practice of bestiality a criminal offense. We fought a bill for 10 years trying to get that done.
Specifically.
Finally got it done. So what happened last spring? A district court in Toledo overturned the larger law that it was in, but that was only one state district court, so it only applies in that district. Everybody else, there are cases up right now because it was tied into a larger bill regarding animal care and things of that nature, and the pet and this whole thing with the pet stores and, you know, dog breeding and all this other fun.
Right, it's puppy mills.
So it's tied into a very, very much wonky, larger piece of legislation, as they normally are during a lame duck session.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have a court that basically said, no, we think that, you know, we don't believe that bestiality needs to be criminalized.
Ohio. Yeah, an absurdity.
Just to let you know, it's out there and much further. And when we heard testimony from undercover law enforcement officers as to the extent of the network, even here in Ohio, they can identify over 6,000 separate individuals they've either tried to arrest for it, or they know have been out trying to seek it on places like Craigslist and other places.
Wow.
Yeah. So folks, the depths of the darkness are a lot deeper than a lot of people understand and believe. And that's the reason why sometimes when you go and you tell people about these things, they look at you like you've lost your mind, because they don't see that happening around them. And it's like, no, you don't see it, because it's all happening in the shadows. Well, some of these groups are starting to try to come out of the shadows, Chuck. Critical Marxist theory, the LGBT movement, is the front of the spear for the rest of the alphabet soup.
Oh, yeah.
Comes behind them, or the alphabet sludge is the way I look at it. Because... you know, there are over 512 different what we call paraphilias, Chuck, which are sexual dysfunctions based on someone receiving sexual arousal from things that are not normative. You know, the Bible says that, you know, the man will cleave to the woman and the woman will cleave to the man, they'll become one flesh, and it's for procreation and for, you know, and for them building each other up. But there are an awful lot of ways, including the pedophilia, including bestiality, including... many, many others that we will not go into on this program ever.
Yeah, and why? Why would we anyway?
And why would we want to? But just to say that there is an awful lot of this going around.
Well, this isn't where we started, but this is where we are at this point.
I know that's not where we started. I know. But if you think about it, if we talk about the... land of the brave and the home of the free, we have to understand that some people's idea of free is enslavement.
Yeah, exactly. It's enslavement to sin.
And some people's idea of bravery is embracing sin and celebrating it.
Well, putting on a mask and throwing quick set concrete on people in the guise of a milkshake is not brave. Confronting them and having a debate with them in public is brave. If you really think you can counter their viewpoint in public, either in a spoken or written debate, that's bravery. Because I know that I've said things that are extremely unpopular. My job is not to be popular. My job is to expose what I believe to be the truth and to argue it and defend it. And so I have taken some unpopular positions only to be told later is like, yeah, we wish we'd listen to you. The most uttered phrase in my family is, you were right on that. I wish I'd listened to you. Not inside our family, but people that friends we know, relatives who come and say, you know, you were right. When you said this is going to lead to this and this and this and this. Yeah. 35 or 40 years ago, there was a book, and I still have the book, and it was a great television show that was made on the BBC and brought over to us on PBS. It was called Connections by a guy named James Burnham. And I can still remember. You can find those on YouTube, I think, the old Connection show. And what James Burnham would do was start out with something that seemed relatively innocuous or some historical event. And he would show you how it led to something else and some momentous thing. And I can still remember one of the ones I remember was problems with gunpowder and attempts to improve, and explosives. And one of the things that came out of it was plastics. Because ivory was getting scarce for obvious reasons. You can't kill all the elephants in the world and take all the ivory and use it for piano keys and billiard balls. Mm-hmm. Carved knife handles. Eventually, you have to come up with something and what they did, they did it with nitrocellulose. Well, nitrocellulose is gun cotton, essentially. It's a modified gun cotton. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what gun cotton is, it's cotton that's treated with the nitrous acid. It's been a while since organic chemistry. But what it does is it is stable to handle. But you expose it to an explosive charge and it will go off like crazy. Well, it kept the Germans in the war during World War I because they couldn't get saltpeter to make gunpowder, so they made instead gun cotton. And it kept them in the war until 1918. The British blockade had knocked off all the sources of saltpeter, which is nitrogen. It's again been too long. It's a nitrogen salt. And but gun cotton also, it turned out, you modify it a little further and it makes a dandy plastic. So the people were making billiard balls out of this modified gun cotton. And Burnham joked that occasionally in a bar room in the Old West where one of these, they'd have a whole thing, it would sound like a gunshot going off, which made people jumpy in the Old West. These are the connections we're trying to build for you, ladies and gentlemen. We're showing you how you start out at one place. You start out at a guy like Colin Kaepernick who calls Nike, to try to kill a tennis shoe or an athletic shoe with a Betsy Ross flag on the back and a red, white, and blue, and you have journalists jumping in from the far left. And by the way, let's face it, the vast majority of journalists are not neutral. They are left to extremely far left, and all you got to do is tune in to CNN, MSNBC, even regular NBC, CBS, ABC, let alone PBS.
Mm-hmm.
And to see it, because they will come out and instead of bringing on guests who can argue the point, the moderator of a program will have a guest from the far left on and will say, well, they'll say this, and they'll give essentially a straw man argument that nobody on our side ever makes, as if it's our position. And then allow the person to answer that position. That's not a debate, and that's not an open discussion of the issues. An open discussion of the issues is a moderator who attempts to take a neutral stance, which you and I both know is impossible, because we know no one is neutral. You can attempt to adopt it, but your biases will come out at one point or another. Or better yet, have two moderators, one from the left and one from the right, and let them have free hand in moderating. Moderating does not mean interrupting. What it means is you are engaging in a fallacy. You'll need to restructure your argument. That's moderation. That's the only way that our side is ever going to get a fair shake. Folks, this is exactly why You see YouTube, Facebook, Google redoing their algorithms to completely wipe out anything that might appear to be a conservative argument.
Mm-hmm.
We are essentially in 2020, we're not going to be allowed to have access to social media platforms. We're not. It's just not going to happen. Now, unless you can get Congress to recognize that fact and remove the protections of these platforms who have become publishers, and we discussed that before we went on the air. You know, there are a lot of people who say, well, you know, Facebook's privately owned, YouTube's privately owned, Google's privately owned, Pinterest is privately owned, blah, blah, blah. Yes, they are. But they're protected in their efforts to police their sites by federal law, which yeah. recognizes them as a public, and public being the magic word in the phrase, public forum.
Yes.
What does that mean? That means the public has access to express opinion. Does that mean that the public has access to post pornography? No. Does that mean that the public has access to attempt to gin up a riot? No. To gin up violence against a specific group? No. That's not what it means. So how are they getting around this? Well, they're claiming that anyone who has a conservative viewpoint is ginning up hatred toward a specific racial or ethnic or religious or lack of religious group and simply deplatforming them. Now, YouTube's partly doing this because YouTube no longer sees itself as a forum where you can post your videos. Barry, you and I could cut a video. Well, I have a YouTube channel that has some Camp American stuff on it. I'm actually getting ready to expand that, I think.
Okay, and great.
See how far it can go. Now, people said, well, you'll be demonetized. I go, and I never signed up to be monetized.
Yeah, being demonetized from zero is really not that hard.
That's right. Zero from zero remains zero. Therefore, taking my money away. Now, if they run ads on my stuff, oh, no, you're not doing that. No. You're not collecting the revenue and not giving me a piece of it. But usually on these demonetized, they just don't run ads. You know what these guys are doing? What I said they should have been doing all along. They're selling advertising for their videos. Finally, you got smart. You found a sponsor. That's how you beat it. Now, what they'll just do is, what they're saying is that we're not getting as many views since we've been demonetized. Of course you're not. They're not putting you in the recommended. Do you know how many thousands of videos and video creators are on YouTube? Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands. And what's interesting is, you know, I have a specific set of things I like to look at. Well, I noticed that some of them were suddenly not being recommended. And I go in, have they got new videos? Yes. Well, what's YouTube doing? They're trying to steer me to more liberal content. I'll see stuff in my feed and I'm like, I don't even want to look at this.
Right.
So that's how, again, go back to James Burnham and connections. You start out innocuous, and then you make a false claim like that somehow Donald Trump colluded with the Russians to be involved in buying some goofy advertising on Facebook and on YouTube and run YouTube videos that steered the election. Oh, come on. Seriously. If those goofy ads that were on Facebook and I noticed them, I'm like, who wrote this stuff? If that steered somebody's vote, then they really had no business voting. And the same thing with the ultra left. If they're believing the things that they're seeing on the Young Turks and on, on Joe Scarborough and, that kind of stuff. Really, folks, you really need to get out of your mom's basement. Sorry. You really do. and take your mask off and go into public and discuss issues like civil human beings. Because you're not now. You know, you cannot beat people to a pulp, send them to the hospital because they've got a brain bleed, give them a concussion, and call yourselves heroes of the revolution. Well, you are, you may be a hero of the revolution, but you're not a hero.
And the revolution that you may be starting is one that you're going to be on the wrong side of. Because, again, I think the left's outrunning their cover with all this, Chuck. I all these things, you know, they have gone a long way to numbing the conscience of America. But there's nothing like a sharp strike on a nerve point to wake people back up. And I believe things like this Antifa movement, I think things like the screaming and crying for, and I think it was Frederica Matthews Green, the congresswoman from Florida, who basically just said the other day that anybody who criticizes a member of Congress should be prosecuted. So basically, kiss away the First Amendment guarantee of the right to petition for redress of grievances against your elected officials, because anything they feel is critical, you should go to jail for.
Well, remember that the college left has been saying that the First Amendment needed to be eliminated for years now.
Yes.
And again, taught by the same 60s radicals who demanded free speech with four-letter words and demanded that they be allowed to have access to university funds to print their screeds and do wide free distribution, their revolutionary manifestos and whatnot, you know, independent student newspapers. You try and do that with a conservative independent student newspaper. Ha, 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 ha. I laugh in your face.
I laugh in your general direction,
that's
yes.
It. Yes, I laugh in your face. You are silly. Because that's not going to happen. If you want to run an independent student newspaper, you got to seek independent funding, because the university is not going to back you up. Because they are busy creating the case that anyone who's a conservative is automatically a racist and an oppressionist. And again, critical theory. We live in dangerous times, but you're right. What is happening, really? The same thing that happened in 2016. People who very quietly are coming over and saying they will vote for Trump, but they won't say so. And they won't tell a pollster that.
Yeah, the numbers are growing almost daily.
Yeah. Is there going to be shenanigans to try to steal the election? Oh, look. Cory Booker went to Mexico to campaign for president. Do you think there's going to be shenanigans? Oh, all kinds of them. All kinds of them. People are going to be encouraged to come across the border and apply for a driver's license, which basically means what happens when you go get your driver's license. They don't ask you for citizenship information. Do you want to register to vote?
Right.
In fact, you know, Cory Booker went over to Juarez, Mexico, and helped people across to come across into the United States, across the Santa Fe Bridge at El Paso. I'm just dumbfounded. They've gone from Obama saying virtually the same thing that Donald Trump's saying about illegal immigration in 2012. To suddenly open borders. Just come on in. Make yourselves at home. Register to vote. Vote away. And by the way, we'll give you all the free stuff you can handle. When you're talking about free college tuition and mortgage assistance and, you know, free decent public housing, and, you know, we've tried that free public housing thing, or, you know, quote unquote decent public housing. What's happening to all the quote-unquote decent housing that was built in the 50s and 60s as public housing? Because those were decent places. Clean, efficient, appliances, you know, all the whole thing. What happened to all of them? You ever drive through the south end of Chicago before they tore all those moldy story jobs down? Bear, it was like war zone. There were people who the buildings were boarded up and people had knocked the boards off the windows and were burning fires inside the building. You know, the buildings were locked. They just broke in and took up residence and kept warm by starting fires on the inside. I'm just dumbfounded at people. We don't understand that when people earn something, they take good care of it. When people don't earn it and it's simply given to them, they don't care.
Yep.
They don't care. Ask any kid who worked from the time he was 12 till he was 16 to get his first car. And one of his friends does something stupid in it. And what happens? He gets excoriated, man. This is my car. This is the thing I worked for 4 years. You do not do that to my car or in my car. The same thing with a guy who works his whole life because he wants to get a Corvette for some unknown reason. He said the non-Corvette fan. You mess around with his Corvette. I can remember my dad bought one. My dad had one, and he came around the corner in the driveway at the same time my mom was coming around the corner going the other direction. We had a 90-degree turn in our driveway, and they met. Well, my mom had a big old Caprice Classic that was, you know, a land yacht that essentially could have been melted down into a, you know, minesweeper.
yeah, I remember the land yacht.
Yeah, and my dad's poor Corvette was, of course, fiberglass. Well, guess which one held up better in the. I mean, they were both going about 5 miles an hour. Guess which one held. My dad sat in his car and cried.
I would say the fiberglass one didn't come out on top.
Yeah, dad did cry in the car. So, you know, this is back in the 70s. I think it was a 74. It was red and the whole thing, you know. Red. Now, one thing he did do, he showed that he was a more of a senior citizen. He wasn't ancient at the time, but he was more of a senior citizen. He had an automatic. And I'm like, Dad, why would you buy a Corvette? It's automatic. And he was like, eh. You let me know when you buy one. I said, well, I'm never going to buy one of these. I might buy a 63 split window coupe. But since those are going for about $85,000, I don't think I'm ever going to get there. But
one can dream, though, can't one, they?
I suppose, yeah. I'll see him on, you know, I'll see one at a car show, and I'm like, oh, there it is. Or you know, you go someplace that has classic cars. Oh, there's my car. But I'm not getting one of those. I've already resigned myself to that fact, and that's the problem here, Barry. I can resign myself to certain facts.
Mm-hmm.
These guys on the left can't. They've caught the zeal of a perfectible human race and a progressive vision. I too have a progressive vision, but my progressive vision has to do with the fact that with God's help, you can make a better place and you can make things better for yourself. Now, are there people who are incapable of doing certain things? Yeah, there are. There are people who don't have maximum intelligence, and there are people who have physical deformities or, you know, physical shortcomings. And, you know, our job is to do what? As businessmen, we should be finding a way to give decent employment to these people and using them to the maximum of their abilities. And in many cases, instead, what we're doing is demanding college degrees for jobs that could easily be done with a high school dropout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you had any college? What do I need college for? Okay, yeah, I've had college. What's your point? I mean, you could trade a monkey to do this job. So why are we doing the college? Well, it's just another hoop you have to jump through. And now companies are starting to get the picture. that college degrees mean nothing. And what you're the beauty of young people now. Yes, there are a lot of them in college doing a lot of stupid things. Not all of them, again, I don't want to paint with too broad a brush. They're the ones who are getting all the publicity. The conservative types who are just there to get their education and get out in the work world, they don't get too much press. There are a lot of people who aren't bothering to go to college. They're getting a trade. And they're going to trade school and learning how to weld and learning how to do plumbing. And they like doing carpentry work, all of which can be lucrative. They like doing concrete work. My gosh, if you're a concrete contractor, you can it's long, hot days. But, boy, you can really do good work. Raising barns. You've got all kinds of guys who are, you know, window replacement, siding, roofing. All kinds of trades out there who are looking for good, hardworking, reliable people, because a lot of the people in those trades, they can't get decent people. Why? Because there's just a shortage, and they'll tell you that, and it's worth it to us. If you show up to work every day and work hard, we want you, and we will pay you. Are there bad players? Of course, there's bad players everywhere.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you knew this or not, but Franklin County just decided that they just voted a $15 an hour minimum for all county employees and consequently raised everybody else, you know, because they ran into a situation.
They'll be coming back and asking for a tax increase on sales tax or something because they can't seem to make their budget.
Barry, I have a close relative who sat down, who's involved in finance, who works for the county, and mm-hmm. just did get a raise. He said, yeah, it wasn't much, but it's... I said, yeah, but it's a raise, dude. It's $80 a month. Don't squawk. He did the calculation. He goes, oh, this is going to cost millions. Because he knows about how many people... He says, because they had to do step increases for some middle management because... They then had workers who would be making more than the middle management. So he said, "Oh, this is going to cost millions." And I said, "You know what millions mean?" I go, "Get prepared to take your $80 a month pay increase and have them take it back as a tax increase, because that's what's going to happen. They're going to have to raise the sales tax. They're going to have to raise the county piggyback." To pay for it. That, folks, this is the law of unintended consequences. This is the whole... again, we started out talking about tennis shoes, and we did James Burnham's connections out to taxation. Everything's hooked up. You can't look at anything. You have to have a big picture view and be able to get up above it and look down and see how all the moves work together. You know, that's what we used to try to do at Camp American. Don't get focused. And I've seen conservatives do this. They get focused on goofy things. In Newark, we've been laughing here because the county commissioners, there was a gazebo on the courthouse lawn. And it disappeared overnight one night. Why? Well, because essentially the judges wanted more parking on the grounds of the courthouse. Mm-hmm. And the judges were demanding that they not have to walk up the block and a half from the county lot. So was it a burn deal? Yeah, it was a burn deal. How'd they do it? The county commissioners did it in the dark of night. Well, everybody got focused on that, and I go, you're missing the big picture. You need to look at it from the big picture. And I would say if that's the theme of our show, look at the big picture.
Absolutely.
And get involved, folks. Get involved. And go back and listen to last week's show. I don't repost them, you know. Go back to around July of 2015. You'll find that program that we played. That being said... all our archives are up, www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And you know what? We're out of time. So I'm going to say, you know what we think? We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And you can leave comments on our broadcast archives and on our new stuff when we post it. So join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.